Author Stephen Koss's new book, The Fever of 1721, The Epidemic That Revolutionized Medicine and American Politics, tells the story of a fateful year when a combination of momentous events set in motion the inevitability of the American Revolution. Koss's history illustrates how Boston's largest smallpox epidemic ignited the controversial practice of inoculation, political uprising with Boston ousting its royal governor, and the first free press in the colonies, which changed American politics, medicine, and journalism. Again, the title of the book is The Fever of 1721, The Epidemic That Revolutionized Medicine and American Politics. And we welcome Stephen Koss to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure. Thank you, Joe.
What brought you to this subject?
Well, believe it or not, this subject, this book, I should say, started with a calendar page. Way back in 1993, my wife and kids, at Christmas time, gave me a little desk calendar, a fact-a-day calendar. And I was thumbing through those pages, and I noticed this event, that in June of 1721, Zabdiel Boylston, the doctor, performed the first inoculation experiment in the West. Now, I had never heard of this, and this calendar page also went on to say that Cotton Mather, who I'd only known from Salem, was the person who had brought the idea to him. So I was captivated almost on the spot. And at that point, I was looking for something to write as a screenplay because I was sort of thinking of myself as a screenwriter. And I went ahead and did a little research, and I wrote a screenplay, and I put it in a drawer, and it stayed there for about a decade. And I took it out at the recommendation of a friend who said, you know, you really ought to make this into a book. And that was about 8 years ago, and I just finished the book a year ago.
And that book is The Fever of 1721. So how many facts were on that page of that desk calendar, and what were your initial questions and what you wanted to investigate?
All the desk calendar page itself said that on June 26, 1721, a doctor named Zabdiel Boylston inoculated his son and several others, that it was very controversial. The whole town was outraged that Cotton Mather, the Puritan minister, had brought him the idea, and that it had changed the course of medical history. And at that point, I only knew Boylston as a street in Boston, and as I said, I only knew Mather as the bad guy from Salem. So I really felt like I needed to know more.
You point out in the book that this is really one of the first dramas of the American Revolution. Why was this so crucial when it comes to American independence?
Well, at the same time, in 1721, at the same time that smallpox was attacking Boston, and Boylston and Mather were trying to get people inoculated, there was also a big political hullabaloo going on. The royal governor, Samuel Shute, had been in the colony for several years, and there was a politician, American politician named Elisha Cook, who had made it his business to make Governor Shute's life miserable. And the brief story on Cook is that he was in favor of the original Massachusetts charter, which had given the colony really an enormous amount of latitude. They could pick their own governor. They were almost self-governing. And then that charter had been taken away and replaced with what was called the new charter. Cook hated the new charter. And really from that point forward, Cook had made it his business to oppose the crown and oppose English rule in America. So I think of him as kind of a founding grandfather almost for America. And with the way Cook sort of built power against the royal governor was by consolidating support, which, believe it or not, had never really been done before. And Cook owned a lot of taverns, and he bought a lot of drinks for a lot of people and started building this very strong anti-crown political organization. And that organization would be known in future decades as the Boston Caucus. And the Boston Caucus, of course, would continue on through the decades. It would grow. It would spin off things like the Sons of Liberty and would eventually spark the revolution itself.
You talk in the book about how this health crisis, like a burgeoning epidemic, magnifies societal tensions of all kinds, especially when it does come to politics.
Right.
How do you see that in this case in those very early years?
Well, what happened specifically in this case was that because the royal governor, Samuel Shute, was really desperate to regain control of the colony, he sensed he was losing control. London knew he was losing control. He knew he was on the verge of being recalled by the crown. So when smallpox came to Boston, it became a leverage point for Samuel Shute. So specifically, he called the Massachusetts House of Representatives, the elected legislature, into session in really pretty much at the worst point of the entire epidemic, when 30 people a day were getting sick out of a population of like 11,000. He called the legislature together and basically held them hostage in this smallpox-laden atmosphere in an attempt to coerce their capitulation and to save his skin, his political skin. So in that case, it very literally was a mechanism for what ended up happening politically.
Much of what you write about in the book has to do with the role and ultimately the responsibility of the media. You write about the New England Courant. Tell us about this publication and how they got so involved in this particular brouhaha.
Sure. Well, the New England Courant was founded in 1721 in August by James Franklin. James Franklin was Benjamin Franklin's older brother, and Benjamin Franklin was James Franklin's apprentice at the newspaper and at the Franklin Printing House. James had always wanted to start a newspaper, but in Boston, there were already two papers. Neither one of them made very much money. Both were really boring. James thought he could do much better. He had been in London and had seen much more interesting journalism, but he didn't have an opportunity. He didn't have a way in. And when smallpox, or rather when inoculation came along during the smallpox epidemic, it was such a controversial issue that he saw that as his opportunity to start the paper. So the New England Courant was started opportunistically to capitalize on the controversy over inoculation. And in fact, James Franklin came out against inoculation, which is ironic because his brother Benjamin, in future years, would become the foremost proponent of inoculation in the colonies. But I think James was less concerned with inoculation per se than with having an opportunity to start his paper. And he wanted to do many other things, and he did go on to do many other things, including argue for a free press.
What was it about the issue of inoculation that spooked the people of Boston so harshly?
Well, now that we know it works, it's easy to pass judgment on them. But when you think about it, it was so counterintuitive, because this is not vaccination. This is literally taking smallpox pus from an outbreak on someone who has the disease, and then taking that and implanting it in an incision made in the arm of a healthy person. So you're literally giving them smallpox, albeit through not the way you generally get it. So the person would, that just seemed crazy, and you can understand why people thought it was crazy, because this was such a deadly disease. Why would you want to introduce it into anyone's body in any form? I think what happened was that people thought not only was this attempted murder, but they also questioned the source of it, because it had come from two what were considered questionable sources. One of them was a medical trial that had happened in Constantinople, which seemed like some faraway foreign place where people were not as sophisticated as Europe and in England, and also from Cotton Mather's African slave, who he called Onesimus. Onesimus had a scar on his arm and told Mather about how he had gotten the scar, and it turns out that there were many black African slaves in Boston who had similar scars, because inoculation had been practiced in Africa, at least in the area where a lot of slaves came from, for at least decades. We don't know how long for sure. So Mather, to his credit, believed Onesimus, and he believed the Constantinople report. But other people were skeptical, not only of the counterintuitiveness of the operation itself, but also they doubted its sources.
What was it about Dr. Boylston and this practice of inoculation, do you think, that went under the historical radar for so long?
I think that, you mean in terms of like maybe not knowing as much about him as some other figures in medicine?
Yes.
Yeah. I think it's because when Edward Jenner came along, I mean, Edward Jenner is credited with vaccination. There's some debate about who ought to be credited, but vaccination came along about 80 years after this experiment. And vaccination, you know, did a lot of things. It refined inoculation in a way that made vaccination profoundly important, because vaccination was initially using cowpox instead of real smallpox. So you would get the same immune response in the people being inoculated, or vaccinated rather, but it wasn't deadly like smallpox inoculation could be. And it also wasn't contagious. If you were inoculated with real smallpox, you could give it to other people you came in contact with. That wasn't true of vaccination. And I think because that became sort of the mechanism that going forward helped eradicate smallpox, I think that people forget this earlier step. But without this earlier step, that might not have happened.
The name of the new book is The Fever of 1721, the epidemic that revolutionized medicine and American politics. It is published by Simon & Schuster. Stephen Koss, a great pleasure. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Again, the title of the book, The Fever of 1721, published by Simon & Schuster. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.